We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
Mahomes, shotgun snap, drops back five, got the block. They come on the side. He winds up, he throws a long pass. Wide open Hill catches the ball at the 22 in San Francisco. What a play by Mahomes!
NFL Live, weekdays at 7 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Presented by Easton Roofing and Miller Lite.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime.
Good evening and welcome into another edition of NFL Live KC on this Tuesday night. I'm Todd Lebo here with you for the next hour, taking you up to the Sporting KC show at 8 o'clock. Remember, Sporting plays Philadelphia on Thursday in the knockout round of the MLS's back tournament. So that's going to be previewed tonight with Nate and Allie and Carter from down inside the bubble. Then at 9 o'clock, our good friend Joshua Briscoe will be along for almost entirely sports. So that's your schedule for the night. Let's dive into what's happening in the NFL. The deadline is approaching on Monday for people to opt in or out of playing in the National Football League. We saw plenty of people opt out today across the league. Now, of course, we know that Laurent Duvernay-Tardif opted out for the Chiefs over the weekend because he wants to continue pursuing helping people because he's an actual medical doctor in his home country of Canada. So that's happening, but we're seeing some more players opt out now because you can get $150,000. It comes out of your contract for next year. It's not super complicated, but there are some reasons some of these players want to opt out for health reasons of their own, health reasons for their family. And we're seeing that happen. There've been plenty of people opt out already, and that list will continue to grow. It's not going to shrink because you opt out, you don't opt back in. People have to get that stuff figured out by the 3rd of August. So we'll keep in tune with that. But one of the reasons they're opting out, obviously, could be for their own personal reasons, whether it's the health of their own. And, you know, here's an interesting guy who you guys probably remember this name. Myron Roll was an All-American safety at Florida State back in the day. Rhodes Scholar, super amazing athlete who ended up playing a few years in the National Football League. He's a little bit like Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. He's super smart and wanted to be a doctor. So he is actually a doctor of, you know, he's a neurosurgeon resident right now. I've seen him on some TV things. He was on ESPN today talking about some of these, you know, things that players are having to go through to make these decisions. And he's an interesting guy to talk to. Now, he's not an infectious disease expert, okay? But he is an actual medical doctor, and he's also someone who played football at the highest level in college and played the National Football League. And he says there are lots of challenges for players in making the decision on whether or not to play.
I think the absolute must of being very transparent with their gear, being transparent with, you know, how many infections they have. You know, if you have three negative tests and then one positive test on a player, you know, I wouldn't consider that a win just because there was three negatives. So that one positive is the issue, right? And then also, you know, making sure that you absolutely get the opinion and the advice and, you know, seek the knowledge and insight of independent parties, epidemiologists, and anesthesiologists, intensivists, people who have worked on the front line of COVID patients in the hospital or research settings, so that they're able to give, you know, valuable contributions to what's happening, right? If you want a league to start, your agenda may be so narrow focused on just getting the games going, regardless of what happens, you know, with testing and how players may be ill or whatever the case may be positive. But if you have another group that you give true, essential, and real authority to say, you know what, we're going to halt this. This is too much. You know, four cases is considered a pandemic in epidemiology terms, or eight cases is considered an outbreak or whatever the case may be. You know, listen to these folks and give them a real voice, and listen to the players as well. I think that needs to be an absolute thing that happens, because if you want to treat these players not like commodities, you need to give them a voice in all aspects of the sport, not just with Black Lives Matter or breast cancer awareness or domestic violence or these other initiatives that you push into the community. Give them a voice here as well. If they're unsafe, then listen to that and take that into heavy consideration.
That's Dr. Myron Roll, former NFL player, talking about choosing whether or not to come play. Now, the thing that I've talked about a bunch in dealing with this COVID outbreak and sports is the fact that, you know, they're going to have the testing, unlike anything at probably at your job. Now, maybe someone works somewhere where there's all kinds of testing, but for the most part, these professional athletes are going to get tested more and are going to be in a safer working environment, COVID-wise, than almost anybody. Whether you're working at a grocery store, you're working at, you know, a retail store, an, you know, auto repair shop, you know, on the, you've seen all these outbreaks on meat packing lines. I mean, there's, you know, you're working up at Clay Como, putting Fords together, whatever. There's lots of different jobs where they're not testing everyone every other day and having people quarantine. It's just a different deal the rest of us are living. So professional football is going to find their way to do it. And, you know, they're doing some testing. But in the end, what this is going to come down to, as I've said for 5 months straight, and this is what we've seen in Major League Baseball with the Miami Marlins. You know, the league announced today they had no positive tests from anyone since last Friday except for people on the Marlins, which leads me to believe someone on the Marlins, one, two, three people, I don't know how many people, went somewhere they weren't supposed to go, because in between negative tests, they got somewhere and they picked it up and then they brought it back into the clubhouse. That is going to be the thing that stops sports. Because as I've said a bunch of times, whether you think the virus is fake, real, you care about it, you're an anti-masker, you're a corona bro, whatever you are, it doesn't matter what you think about this. When you have bargained and gotten all this stuff done in a league, and in that league they say if you get a positive test, you cannot play for 14 days, it doesn't matter whether you believe it or not believe it, or you're asymptomatic or not. You have it, they're not going to let you play. So that's, it's going to be on the players to do their level best not to bring the virus into the facilities. Because when football comes around, it's a little different than baseball. Not as much travel. These guys are staying at home. So that part's the same as baseball. But they're not going on multi-city road trips. They're going to go, and football players don't have time to get in trouble when they go to town. The football players generally, and I think this is going to change this year, they'll try to do some of this differently. They generally fly in the night before the game. They go to the hotel, they have meetings, they spend the night in the room, they get up, they get on the bus, they go to the game, they play the game, they take a shower, they get on the bus, they go straight to the airport. That's it. I think they will probably look to, if it's feasible on some of these games, actually fly on game day. If you've got a late night game or a later game where it's pretty close where you can do it, I think they probably will consider flying on game days on occasion just to avoid the hotels. So it, you know, they don't have the opportunities. Baseball players, you know, the Royals have been in Cleveland and Detroit. So they flew up on Thursday to Cleveland. They're supposed to stay in the hotel, but that's Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, Monday night. Now it's Tuesday night. Then they'll have Wednesday night, and they're flying home Thursday after the game. That's all these nights where the temptation of going somewhere is different for you. That's not going to be there for football. So I think they've got a chance of doing things a little bit better as far as that part of the testing. Now, the game is different. The contact in the sport and all that, contact between teammates and between opponents is different. But I think they've got a chance with the travel being less, more like a bubble situation. The real thing will be when the NFL players are at home, not when they're on the road. When they're at home, do they do the right thing? And that's what medical expert Stefania Bell talked about on ESPN today.
I've said this for every league that I've talked about, and I've certainly looked at the protocols, and every league has their own challenges, but individual responsibility comes to mind. Look, we know that this virus is highly contagious. There's things we're learning about it every day. That's why they call it novel and emerging. I spoke with Dr. Tom Mayer, the medical director for the NFLPA, and he said those two words are critical. We learn things about it daily, and we have to adapt. But once these protocols are in place, because they're not in a bubble, they're going to be going home. They have to interact with other people just as a part of daily living. I mean, training camps, for the most part, have players staying with their families. So individual responsibility, doing as much as you can to protect yourself and others, is really a critical aspect of them being able to move forward.
Personal responsibility will be the big part of all of this. And, you know, they've negotiated this stuff. And that's what they've done. Every one of these sports is negotiated a little bit differently. The NFL has their way of going about this. They had the bubble in MLS and the NBA and the NHL, and things have gone okay-ish. You know, they had their troubles early with MLS. They just got a couple of teams out of the bubble. It's gone on. Sporting's going to play on Thursday. They're getting through all this stuff. The National Football League is just now intaking people. The Chiefs did it last week. We're going to talk a little bit later. In Charlotte, the Travis Hancock, they're doing COVID day today, bringing all their players in. So, you know, these things are going to be done throughout. There's no preseason games. They'll find their way to get to it and get after it. And Adam Schefter says football is going to find their best way they can to navigate through this, and hopefully they will learn from the other sports.
I just think that football has set up its own rules, and everybody's aware of what's going on in baseball. And I don't think it's necessarily the same thing. I think baseball was always going to have certain challenges. Every sport is going to have certain challenges. Our world has challenges that it would have to overcome. And football is a little bit different. But what's interesting to me is that, again, if you go back to the plan that the two sides passed on Friday night, you know, one of the things that the NFL put in there is that players can't go out at night. They can't gather in bars. They can't go to large religious services. They can't do many of the things that people are discouraged from doing in today's world, or they'll face discipline. And so I think that it's a situation where the league has looked out and come up with these rules, and you hope for the best.
That's Adam Schefter from ESPN talking about NFL's return to play. All right, now let's have a little fun. Anytime we can talk about Patrick Mahomes, we will. And Patrick Mahomes, it was announced today, is now in the ownership group for the Kansas City Royals, which is pretty cool. He's got a lot of dough. He loves the game. He's a small minority owner, but he is one of the guys who's in the ownership, the new ownership group of the Royals. My understanding is he bought in and everyone else's shares got diluted. No one sold anything to him. That's the way I heard this deal went down. But I had a chance to ask Mike Matheny today, Royals manager, about this. Now, you know, Matheny has been the Royals manager for under a year, and Mahomes was busy when Matheny got the job. And since then, the nation's been shut down. So Mike Matheny says he hadn't had a chance to meet Patrick Mahomes yet, but loves the fact that he's part of the Royals family now.
I know he's his family history in the game. I know he's a fan. So the feeling's mutual. I'm a fan of him. I don't know if anybody's ever watched him on the football field that's not a fan of what he's done. And watch him as a an ambassador for the community. He's just done so many things right. It's going to be good to hopefully get a chance to meet him at some point. But happy for him and the ownership group.
Now you have 9 triples in your career, and one was off his father. Do you remember that triple?
Thanks, Todd. That'll be a great way to introduce myself to him. I'll remember that one. Thank you. I should remember triples because they're pretty painful.
We got to have Mike Matheny go remember all 9 of his triples and see if he can remember that one he got against Patrick's dad. That will be fun for those guys to talk about when they meet. And let's hope eventually all sports people will get to hang out and meet, because that would be fun. NFL Live KC is underway here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back into NFL Live KC on this Tuesday night. I'm Todd Lebo, your host for the evening. Let's hear now from some former Chiefs. Had some fun today on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Former safety Bernard Pollard, who was a fan favorite for his short time here. And as if you'll, when you'll recall, he is the guy who knocked Tom Brady out for basically an entire season of football. It's the last time the Patriots didn't make the playoffs. Now, they ended up winning 11 games that year with Matt Cassel as their quarterback, but didn't make the playoffs. But Bernard Pollard, in the first game of the year, went low and hit Tom Brady and hurt his knee. A lot of things fell out from this. Number one, they made a rule, basically the Tom Brady rule, that you couldn't hit a quarterback down at the knees as he was throwing the ball. And then they've expanded that to where you can't roll into a quarterback, all these things. That came from the fact that Tom Brady, who at that point was a 3-time Super Bowl winner, was knocked out of an entire NFL season the first week of the year when Bernard Pollard hit him. All right, so the Chiefs were no good that year. They lost a bunch of games. They fired Carl Peterson, fired Herm Edwards, brought in Scott Pioli and Todd Haley. And Bernard Pollard says he had not really told this story before, but he told Jason Anderson the story about how when the Chiefs let him go and how it went down with the brand new general manager.
Scott Pioli came in, everything that happened in New England. Now, this is the God's kind of truth. He can deny it if he wants to, but he will not deny it to my face because I know what he did and said. Now, he came in, to the organization when they hired him. He came into my locker as I was sitting in my locker, and he said, "I'm cutting you for what you did to Tom Brady." Literally, his words, verbatim. And I just looked at him, and I told all my teammates, I said, "All right, I'm gone." And so I had no idea what was going on. I had no idea where I was going to go. But then they sent me a letter after they cut me and told me that they cut me because I violated some kind of team rule or whatever. And I'm looking like, that's the furthest thing from the truth. You know, you told me you were cutting me. But this is how the NFL works. And you know, it's all good. You know, I don't hate Scott Pioli. Todd Haley shouldn't have ever got an opportunity to be a head coach. But you know, those guys, they had the opportunity to come in and they destroyed something that could have been special. We had the players, you know, they had to bring in some, you know, other players. But you know, just with that situation and with the way that I left Kansas City, it wasn't fair. This is my first time ever speaking out about it. But Scott Pioli, he knows exactly what he said and did. And for me, you know, I moved on and was able to go with Coach Gibbs, who they fired the entire staff. I was able to go with Coach Gibbs and continue my playing career in Houston.
When you talked to some of your teammates, maybe at the time when you told them, "I'm out, I'm gone," because, you know, I grabbed Tom Brady's leg when I had fallen on the ground already, and apparently that was too much for the new GM to be able to get over and actually look at talent and what he can do for an organization and not a football play that takes place. When you talk to some of your teammates, if that was the case, I get the feeling like maybe that regime, the Pioli Haley, was sort of dead on arrival, that there was no chance that thing was going to be successful with the way they showed up.
Well, just with everything that they did, you know, my teammates knew. Jared Page was who I was close with. He was a guy who I'm still close with. You know, he knew everybody I talked to. Tomba, Brian Waters was a guy that I vented to and got, you know, just a lot of guidance from. Eddie Kinnison was a guy that I was looking to. Sammy Knight was a dude that I talked to. So, you know, Bernard, this is – a lot of people didn't believe it. They literally didn't believe it. And then after it happened, everybody was like, "Well, what violation did you do?" You know, and I'm a dude that I might speak out on the football field, but I'm a rule follower. I don't break rules. I don't buck systems. I do speak up for people who you dog or hate or whatever. I speak up for them. And if you do them wrong, I will talk up, you know, and because I feel like that's what we should do. But, you know, with everything that happened, my teammates knew. And after I left, I've always, like I said, stayed in contact. Derrick Johnson, we always communicated. And it sucked leaving them. But at the same time, you know, it was good. And it was a part of God's plan, you know. So, I'm, you know, as far as with Pioli and Haley, what they did there, you know, I think they had another 3 or 4 years, I think it was, in Kansas City, and then they was gone. So, you know, Haley is a guy where his true colors continued to come out. He was a guy, like I said, he was not, me personally, he was not equipped to be a head coach. He's still not equipped to be a head coach. He was a guy where he struggled, you know, as far as relationships, as far as the OC. Is he good at what he do as far as being an OC? Yeah, he's good. But, you know, being good and being a dickhead, it's just hard as far as when it comes down to, you know, being that coach and getting people to respond to him.
Still plenty of passion there. You can hear from Bernard Pollard, former chief, who has a lot of interests and is well worth listening to the entire podcast. Go check it out at 810WHB.com. Talked a lot about NASCAR and football today, and he was always an energetic guy, and I liked Bernard Pollard. He was a pretty good player for the Chiefs, but they broke that team up. You know, they asked Herm Edwards to go young. Didn't happen, and I guess all those things led to the fact that, you know, Brett Veach and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes are here now. But at the time, it was not a great stretch for the Chiefs when they were in that transition, for sure. All right, let's hear from Chiefs Hall of Famer and Pro Football Hall of Famer Will Shields today. He's got some events coming up. He was on the program to talking to Seren Petro about the Will to Succeed program, but was also talking about how neat it is to have Patrick Mahomes on the Chiefs, and winning that Super Bowl was a pretty cool thing for everyone who ever wore a Chiefs uniform.
Well, it's awesome to watch Patrick Mahomes play, watch him go out and perform and do the things that he's doing. It's great to watch his weapons go to work. I mean, you got a Tariq Hill out there that makes you look good regardless of what you want to do or how you want to do it. We used to be that those kids that played backyard, you know, football, or what do you call it, street football. It was always that one kid that made everyone look a little better regardless of what you did. And then when you got two of them on the same team, it made it even worse. And, you know, I think that's sort of the premise of what they have right now in Kansas City. They have a great 1-2 punch. as well as having, you know, adding great backs to it and everything else, just makes it even better. I like the simple fact that they're, you know, they give the young man the keys to the car and say, hey, let's go drive it. Let's go do what we have to do. And, you know, it's like that, you know, you're sitting on the sidelines like, oh, my God, is he really going to do that? And then it happens and it works. Then you go, oh, yeah, it's just like how I drew it up. It's just how I thought it was going to happen. Hey, it's one of those things that go. And we always say that as a football player. Yeah, the coaches can coach, but you got to make us as coaches look better on the field than we actually can coach. So there's some things you can coach and some things you can't. And natural gifted and ability and being on the same page with other guys, that's hard to coach on a week-in and week-out basis. They have to have that trust in each other. And that's what you see, and that's what you love about it, is that he's enjoying the game, he loves the game, and he's got great guys around him that all trust him to be able to help get things done.
There's Will Shields talking about Patrick Mahomes, and now, of course, you all know that Patrick Mahomes is a part owner of the Kansas City Royals. The club announced that today. He's a very minority share owner of the team, but it's a win-win-win-win all the way around. Mahomes entrenching himself more in the Kansas City landscape with the sport that he loves. And if he can't, you know, gosh, the guy already won the Super Bowl and the MVP and all that stuff, and now he's part owner of the other big franchise, the second biggest franchise in town, and the Royals. So that's pretty cool news today from Patrick Mahomes, who is now a part owner of the Royals as well. You are listening to NFL Live KC, brought to you in part by Miller Lite. Welcome back into NFL Live KC. I'm Todd Lebo here on this Tuesday night, taking you through some of the stuff that's happening in the National Football League. And the date for opting in or out of the season will be next week. So we're starting to see lots of names opt out. Of course, the big news over the weekend was Laurent Duvernay-Tardif from the Chiefs had opted out, not for medical reasons of his own, but because he is helping fight the pandemic up in Colorado. As you all know, he's a medical doctor, and he feels that's a more important calling for him. But we're seeing lots of players across the league opt out for different reasons, whether they are fearful of themselves or they've got small kids at home or whatever reason. We're seeing a lot of it, including some big names like Dante Hightower of the Patriots, who have had a lot of players opt out. That was one of the topics today with Matt Derrick.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not surprised at the numbers, and I'm not surprised that players would do it. You could be surprised by the names, I mean, because, you know, I think that it's maybe the perception is that, hey, the top stars aren't going to do it. Maybe it's guys who are near the bottom of the roster that might be candidates. But I think you get a sense around the league that, you know, players are taking this fairly seriously, and they're taking the consideration of the people around them. And you know, and yeah, in Hightower's case, they just had a baby a couple of weeks ago, so that's a concern. Marcus Cannon's a former cancer survivor, so he's a high-risk candidate. You know, and you've got a lot of players around the league who actually, people think that, you know, football players are super fit and, you know, they're going to be fine. There's a lot of high-risk candidates around the league. And as a result, I think, this isn't the end. I mean, I think you're going to see some more opt-outs, I mean, in probably significant numbers. And, it wouldn't surprise me if more happened with the Chiefs. I mean, it could absolutely certainly happen.
And one of the things that's interesting, too, the players that opt out, from what I'm reading now, is that, you know, you can get a $150,000 salary advance if you opt out just because you don't feel comfortable playing. And then if you have a high-risk situation like Cannon does, you get $350,000. So I just put out there, Matt. But so you think it's possible we see for some Chiefs players that any guys in particular you have in mind, or is it just you're saying that because of the numbers that is probably going to happen with a lot of teams?
Yeah, it's mostly about the numbers. You know, we already have seen one with LDT. You know, but you got about 85 guys on the roster right now. So yeah, I mean, statistically, it would not surprise me at all if they had another. And like I said, I mean, there's a lot of different categories in which you can be high risk. I mean, you know, there's players with previous medical conditions, the, you know, players who, like offensive and defensive linemen that carry a lot of weight are at risk. There's hereditary conditions that you can have that are at risk. And a lot of these things we don't necessarily know about. So, and that isn't even bringing the fact, you know, you've got a lot of players who have young families. They've got maybe parents who live with them or close to them that may be at risk. So that's why I say there's a lot of different factors here about why players may choose to opt out. And, I mean, numbers are that, yeah, I mean, I think every team is probably going to have multiple players decide to opt out.
What was your reaction when you heard of LDT's decision?
I kind of said, wow, when I first saw it. I mean, it was a bit of a surprise initially, but after about 2 seconds, it wasn't a surprise because it really makes perfect sense. I mean, he's been putting himself into a high-risk position the last few months, and I think there's certainly part of it is that he doesn't want to put his teammates or anybody that he would come in contact with in Kansas City at risk after he's put himself there. But then, you know, at the same time, there's a reason why this guy decided to go to medical school. You know, if you want to go into the medical profession, it's because you want to help people and you want to heal people. And the fact that, you know, he wanted to do that while playing football tells you how much of a passion it is for him. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all, really, that he chose to do that. I mean, I think it speaks volumes about his character that, you know, he's willing to do that and put himself at risk to continue working. But like I said, it was an initial shock for about 1 second, but then after that, it made complete and total perfect sense.
We're visiting Matt Derrick. We'll get into the football app implications of some of these things as well in a second, but I'm kind of curious your thoughts. We've heard from Rick Burkholder now. I played a bunch of his comments last night on NFL Live KC as he talks about all the different protocols they're trying to put in place. And we played that sound clip that you heard from that Jake played at the beginning of this segment about watching other leagues and seeing, okay, what can we learn from this? What can we learn from that? What we've learned so far is that the bubble seems to work. It's worked in Major League Soccer. It's so far anyway working in the NBA. It worked in the NWSL when they played. Hockey seems to be having some good success so far. But that's not realistic, it doesn't sound like, for the NFL to try to put some kind of bubble together for a 16-game schedule. What we've seen in baseball is, as soon as the Marlins started traveling, all of a sudden, they went from, like, no cases to, what, over 10 of them in a very short period of time. What do you think that the NFL, I mean, they're different sports. They play in a different way. They travel in a different way and all that. How much should we pay attention to what's happening in baseball when it comes to what we will see in football? Or do you think that they're just completely different, animals here?
No, I mean, if anything, you would say that, you know, football is maybe more at risk because it's a higher contact sport than baseball is. So, and you've got to look at the Major League Baseball, I think, as the example, because you're right. I mean, comparing it to the bubble sports like the NBA, like the NHL, that do seem to be having success with the numbers, it's, you know, you can't compare that since there's no bubble. And I to a degree, I get it. I mean, you know, trying to put an NFL team in a league in a bubble would be very, very difficult just because of the number of people you have to have around them, the size of the rosters, the attrition. So I get why they decided not to go that route. And I think even, you know, and you look at what happened with Minnesota and their head athletic trainer. I mean, that would be the same in Kansas City as Rick Burkholder testing positive for COVID-19. And that's scary because I think it shows that you can do everything right and to the best of your ability, but if there's one person in your circle that doesn't, somebody that you have contact with, you know, it's not going to protect you. And that's the frightening aspect, is that it only takes one issue for it to become widespread for a team.
Matt Derrick from ChiefsDigest.com is our guest. Okay, Matt, let's talk about the Chiefs' offensive line now. They had already lost Stefan Wisniewski, and now they lose LDT, but they do have a lot of bodies. They add Kelechi Osemele, and if he's healthy, you would imagine he will claim one of the starting spots at guard. They also have Andrew Wiley, who has started. They have Martinez Rankin, who could possibly win a spot there. They signed Mike Remmers already this offseason. So then, of course, Lucas Niang, who they drafted in the third round. What do you think of the replacements for LDT and also Wisniewski? Who do you think ends up as the starting guards on this football team?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, my gut right now tells me that, if assuming everybody's healthy week one, I think it would be Osemele and Wiley, but you're right. I mean, they've got a lot of options. You know, Remmers they picked up because, once again, that's a flexible guy that they can move around. They love to have that. And they do have a lot of bodies. And the nice thing is that with the roster construction, the way that it is this year, and having the 16-man practice squads, you know, the Chiefs have not been afraid to carry a lot of offensive linemen. So it certainly would not surprise me early in the season if you saw them carrying 9 or 10 offensive linemen, because they have that many, you know, players that they trust and that they like. Having Osemele fall on their laps at this point and being available when they had a need, it's just kind of, once again, it's kind of a continuation of that good luck that he's had for a while when it comes to that kind of thing. Players of his caliber simply usually aren't available at this time of year. And if he's healthy and is, you know, to the form that he was just even 2 years ago, that's a great pickup for this team. It would be a perfect fit.
What do you think Niang will be as a rookie? Like, what's, you think it's legitimate that he could move inside, and how much should we expect from him this season?
Yeah, I think it's definitely legitimate, and it wouldn't even surprise me if he, I mean, he's going to compete for a starting position. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think they would love to find a way to get him snaps, because that's more important almost than the development of an offensive lineman than anything else, is just getting those looks and not being able to get them with a preseason this year and having the limited number of practices, you know, in the training camp period. That, I think, is, you know, it's going to be more difficult, but at the same time, I think that there's a little bit more motivation, because, you know, this, they may very well be looking at Niang as being a starter for sure in 2021. And if that's the case, you'd like to get him in there. Not going to break in at tackle right now. There's not a spot there, but Chiefs aren't opposed to putting a player like that inside and kicking them back out when there is a spot available. And that would be a place to learn. So and certainly he seems to have the talent, seems to have the intelligence to be able to pick everything up. Like I said, it's, you know, numbers-wise, it's kind of tough, but I think there's certainly a chance you see a lot of him this year.
That's Chiefs insider Matt Derrick talking about, you know, some of the stuff happening with opt-outs and also where the Chiefs will go from here. Now, we don't know if there'll be other players who opt out, players from the Chiefs who will help, you know, shape what this roster is going to be. That deadline is August 3rd. We'll see what happens there. It's certainly something to watch as we move along, working sports through this pandemic. You are listening to NFL Live, KC. Welcome back into NFL Live, KC, brought to you by Miller Lite, 96 calories of love. That's actually not the tagline.
It should be.
It should be. 96 calories of Josh Briscoe coming your way right now. Almost entirely sports coming up tonight. You passed on your chance to buy into the Royals.
Yeah.
And left it to Patrick Mahomes. Is that what I'm to understand?
Yeah, I'm holding out for the NBA team. And so, you know, I have that limited kind of window of money where I can get in on one professional franchise. Yeah. It's like, am I going to...
The Royals are already here. They don't need your help.
They're here already, and Clark hasn't called me back. It's about my... I do call him Clark. We are close.
Yeah. The Clarks.
The Clark
He's
family.
The Clark.
The Clark family hasn't called me back. And so, yeah, I've even got, you know, I got a few bands for an NHL team, if that's what it comes to.
You know, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter today asking Patrick to get an NBA team here. If anyone could do it, it might be him.
So it sort of feels like that, right? Like, if you would have said this even pre-Super Bowl, I'd be like, we would all love an NBA team, but come on. Not only do I think he has the seed money now, he could do the Jeter thing, where it's, I've got like $2 million, he's going to get that Adidas money summon, but I can bring together... You know, I'm Patrick Mahomes. I got my connections. We're going to see who Cliff Illig's got. We're going to see who John Sherman knows. We're going to see who the Clark family knows. And we're going to go ahead and bring them together. And then I, Patrick Mahomes, will be like the figurehead of it.
Let's do it.
I think that there's a non-zero chance that that eventually ends up being the thing that gets an NBA team here. Which
it's crazy.
Is crazy.
Now, listen, I have gotten used to not knowing what to expect in the world of sports, especially over the past 6 months.
Yes.
You just don't know what you're going to wake up to in the morning. And I did not think I was going to wake up to, oh, Patrick Mahomes is part of the Royals. I get it.
I also think that happened at like 2 p.m. Are you okay? You woke up to that this morning?
Well,
2 p.m.?
Not wake up to it. Wake up and have this happen.
Fair enough.
During the day.
Fair enough.
It was well before 2, actually, as well. I think it was in the 1 o'clock hour. But it's just like, okay, what are you going to do next, man? What's happening? This is how it goes with him.
It's insane. Like, I've been saying since they won the Super Bowl, it's been clear, I think he's had the best start to a career of any professional athlete ever. Maybe there's some soccer player that I don't have a great reference point for, but American sports history, Mahomes has the best career start ever.
MVP, Russell Wilson had a pretty good thing going, but
MVP
he didn't get all the credit.
One,
yeah.
Super Bowl MVP
all defense,
year two,
yeah.
and it is, that's the thing with Russell Wilson or even like Roethlisberger.
Yes, Tom Brady wasn't bad.
Brady also, they all won early, but it was
never their team.
It wasn't until their second one that you were like, Wilson only has the one, obviously, but it wasn't until their second one for Brady and for Roethlisberger, like, oh, that's their Super yeah. Bowl. And then it's MVP, Super Bowl MVP, $500 million contract. Let's get in on the Royals. Like, and it's going to keep coming. He's going to get one of those $1 billion lifetime
let's
deals.
Let's get
from
Roger
Adidas.
Goodell to come out of his cave and address something.
Yes, yes. I am going to be the first person in the history of the NHL, or the NFL. I just saw NHL again. I'm trying to. I would love an NHL team. I'm going to be the first person in the history of the NFL to get my hand up in that Roger Goodell puppet and make him say what I want to hear.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Totally crazy. Speaking of crazy, we've seen a lot of players opt out.
Yeah.
In the National Football League. There will be more to come
yes.
because the decision is going to be next Monday. And I've said this for 5 months about this. I'm not going to tell anyone how to feel about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's not my place to tell you you have to come play.
Yep.
Or you shouldn't play. It's not my deal.
Yeah.
So I guess we're just going to have to watch how this goes. The dark side of all of this is that somewhere there's a young player who is like, is more people that quit, the
right.
more chance I have to play.
Yeah.
That's just how it goes.
For sure. Honestly, that might be the fairest part of it because there are going to be a lot of guys who wouldn't have gotten shots because the rosters are going to get tighter and tighter and all of that. But yeah, no, I mean, and I think you're right, like, whenever what we're talking about here in situations like this, like, it's literally guys who are like, either the choice, there's not an easy winner on this. You're either saying I'm gonna go play and take on the risk of this, which is a totally fair thing to do, or I'm not gonna take on this risk, but I am going to forfeit my money for this year and my service time for this year and my a year of my NFL career, which is already so short.
Out of sight, out of mind. Sometimes in the National Football
Absolutely.
League.
Absolutely, there was some undrafted free agent rookie that just opted out, and that he might have just opted out of his NFL career, but he wasn't willing to sacrifice it because he's got other stuff he wants to do. You know, he's worried about his health. And so it's also, I think, 100% viable as a choice to make. It's just a huge mess. And that's what we knew that when we were walking
well,
into it.
Well, it's not a mess yet because they don't have games scheduled yet. This is when you should have
sure.
your mess. Have your mess now. Don't have your Marlins
it's,
mess.
Oh, absolutely. It's a mess that they're headed into. And so now, hey, you want to take this off ramp. You got a week to take this off ramp or not. It's a mess to be anticipating and to be making that decision now. I can imagine being really hard.
And as I've said a dozen times, I don't like to say I've said a million times because I haven't done that a million
but
times.
But a dozen probably.
I've said probably a dozen times, Gen Pop in America is making this decision every day
mm-hmm.
on whether or not they mm-hmm. can afford to go to work or can't go to work.
Absolutely.
Or maybe you can't do the thing. So
yeah.
I don't feel all that bad for these guys.
No,
okay?
it's I would say it's a
any
hard
worse,
decision.
I don't want to feel any worse for them than I feel for anyone who has to make a choice of whether to go
yeah.
go to work at the grocery store or go be a teacher or go on the assembly line at a factory
oh, yeah.
or grab a bunch of packages in a warehouse and put them on a truck and drive them to someone's house you don't know. I don't want to
oh, 100%.
Do that. So
I
think sometimes
playing...
we do this, we feel, I'm not saying you are, but I'm seeing
sure.
all of you, oh, I feel so bad. Yeah, I don't.
No, I don't think you have to be sympathetic, but I think it's good to be empathetic
sure.
about it and to say, I can understand the stress of that decision. They're making hard decisions. It's not as hard a decision, though, as someone who might be a high-risk essential worker who has no money in the bank. And so they're saying, I'm either, and their unemployment is running out and there's no other options here. That sucks way harder than what this is happening here.
I mean,
but
the reason
it is
we
all
want
difficult.
This is for the people who are living the crappy part of their lives to have something to do when they go home
sure.
to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
So try.
Absolutely. It would be, I think it's great that we're trying to make this happen. Secretly, of course, I've told you in private many times, I'm rooting for COVID and against sports. I know I've said that privately. I'll finally say it on the radio now.
Said it. He said it.
I'm
write team, him down as that guy.
Team COVID.
What's coming up on Almost Entirely Sports tonight?
We've had a bunch of stuff we haven't really gotten to fully get up to speed with. Coleccio Simile and a couple other things, pieces of Chiefs audio we didn't even get to last night from Saturday, and Seth Kaiser at 10. We'll talk about Simile. He just had a piece come out on Travis Kelce. He's better at blocking than you think he is. That's the tease.
How do you know what I think about Travis Kelce's blocking?
I pointed at you, but I was talking to the audience.
For no reason.
I pointed at you because you're in the room. I was talking to the audience.
He's better at blocking than some people think he is. Then
he gets credit for. Yes. I don't know how you feel about
that. I think Seth Kaiser is just trying to find good things about the Chiefs because that's what he does.
I mean, that can also be true. It can be both.
It can be all of it. That'll be a lot of fun. That's Joshua Briscoe here on NFL Live KC, Almost Entirely Sports, coming up tonight at 9 o'clock with all the fun and games. Welcome back into NFL Live KC on this Tuesday night. I'm Todd Lebo in for you, and let's look around as we do each and every night to an opponent, number one, or just a different place in the National Football League. We're going to head to the Carolinas now and talk to Travis Hancock from WFNZ and check in on the Panthers, who right now are on the Chiefs' schedule, assuming football happens. First of all, Travis, how's everything going in the Carolinas?
Hey, I was doing good until I just remembered the Chiefs are on the Panthers' schedule, so now I'm concerned about that more than ever.
Yeah, it's the Chiefs are that team now, I think, when you look up and you're like, okay, all right, yeah, maybe that's not going to be a win. I don't care where it is. It's going to be one of those games.
Right, when you play the win-loss game, a lot of teams, most of the teams in the NFL right now, just write the fans will write the L on the Chiefs, and that's a credit to you guys for sure.
Yeah, whether or not it happens or not, because you're not going to win all the games. We've seen that, and they probably won't this year, but they are certainly the big bad boy. And Patrick Mahomes, who is the king of the world in Kansas City, if he couldn't endear himself to anyone anymore, he is a minority owner in the Royals now. So he bought a part of the Kansas City Royals. So why not, right? If you have all this money.
When you have nearly $1 billion, you got to spend it somewhere. So why not, try to fund the local baseball team? I respect that.
He loves baseball. So, right, his dad played baseball. So now, I mean, this guy, I'm telling you, he can't do anything wrong. I mean, everything he does, the people of Kansas City love this guy so much. It would be great to be Patrick Mahomes. But I don't think any of us are ever going to get that chance, I guess. But, a guy who was basically like the king of the world in Carolina was Cam Newton. Took the team to the Super Bowl, right? He was huge in the South, obviously. He won a national championship, Heisman Trophy, all those things. And they said goodbye. What's this been like? Was the time right to be done with Cam Newton in Carolina?
Yeah, the time was absolutely right. Now, a lot of fans here will tell you it wasn't the right time. They think that he still could, try to reestablish himself as he did 5 years ago as a league MVP. But with where the franchise is, it's in a rebuild mode. It's only bringing back 46% of its snaps as a team. New head coach, new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. A pretty stacked top of the draft we anticipate in 2021 with Trevor Lawrence from Clemson, Justin Fields from Georgia, and Trey Lance from North Dakota State. So it's not win now mode under Matt Rule year one. That's not what he does. At Temple and Baylor, he won one game each in his first year there at those schools in college. So even Matt Rule will tell you right now as a Panthers coach, it's not about wins in year one. It's about establishing a culture, establishing a plan, and maybe winning in 2022, 2023. So where is the quarterback trying to play for a contract of Cam's caliber fit into that? He simply didn't, and it was the right move to move on at that time.
Yeah, so he is out and Matt Rule is in. I was pretty impressed with Matt Rule. We got to be around him at Big 12 Media Days and on Big 12 teleconferences and things like that around here in this short time with Baylor. He certainly turned things around down there. But I got to say, I was a little surprised when it was like he got an NFL job. And I was a little surprised in the offseason before you heard these sniffs about NFL teams looking at him. What's he been like now? It's been a weird year. You haven't got to be around him a lot. But what do you think so far of the way Matt Rule carries himself?
So far, so good. I think he's going to be a fantastic. I think he's going to one day get this team to a Super Bowl. Does he win one? Of course, that always depends. But I think he's good enough in time to rebuild this thing. It's not just the fact that he won a lot of games at Temple and Baylor. And I know that a lot of people will say, well, the college to pro thing, it's tough, and it is. But this guy was highly thought of by many league, high-ranking league officials and personnel members. So he's got a lot of backing. He's got connections to Andy Reid from Philadelphia when he was at Temple, and Andy was in Philadelphia as well. He's got connections to Pete Carroll. He's been endorsed by Tom Coughlin. He's got a ton of backing So that's certainly a good thing. And I just think that he commands a room. He's a leader. And I think that the job at Baylor wasn't just that he turned it around. It's where Baylor was. That was one of the most disastrous football programs of recent memory. And I'm not just talking about on the field. All the crazy off-the-field behavior and things he had to turn around. And Todd, he didn't take 5 or 10 years to fix it. He had that thing humming to a sugar bowl in year number three. That's one of the more remarkable jobs we've ever seen in terms of how quickly he did that. And to come here, it's not the Baylor behavior situation, but it's certainly a young football team that's been torn down. And he's showed at the college level there's no better builder of teams right now, I would say, than Matt Rhule.
He's got some stuff to work with as well on the offensive side. Christian McCaffrey's obviously a fantastic player. He's got a new deal with him. I think people feel Teddy Bridgewater has turned the corner health-wise and has a chance to do something better. Travis, what do you think about what can happen offensively for this Panthers franchise in this early part of Matt Rhule's rule?
Well, ESPN a couple weeks ago ranked them a top five offense in the league, and that may seem crazy on the surface for what we've seen recently, but they are loaded. They can be a really, really special offense. Bridgewater, if he remains healthy, with new offensive coordinator Joe Brady, who comes from LSU, and we saw what he just did. Look, Joe Burrow was average, maybe even below average. No one was talking about Joe Burrow before last season. Kind of a guy. And then he goes on to have one of the greatest sports seasons ever in one season. I'm not saying Teddy Bridgewater is going to do that, but Joe Brady clearly knows what he's doing. Can he elevate Teddy Bridgewater to just a level sort of above game manager? Can he be a guy that helps you win games, not just a guy that doesn't lose games for you? So Bridgewater can do that. DJ Moore will be a third-year wide receiver. He was top five in the league in receiving yards at one point last year, especially towards the end. They bring in Robbie Anderson, a Temple guy under Matt Rhule, former Jet wide receiver, to fill a role there. And, of course, there's the great Christian McCaffrey, who, you know, you can argue this, but he might be the best player in the NFL, non-quarterback. Of course, Patrick Mahomes would be the best player, but McCaffrey from a non-quarterback position, you know, he's that good. He is that good. So you've got DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Christian McCaffrey. Then there's guys like Ian Thomas, a third-year tight end who will replace Greg Olsen. You've got a guy in Curtis Samuel who was a second-round draft choice out of Ohio State at wide receiver. He now drops down in role. So DJ Moore, the one, Robbie Anderson, the two. We'll see where Samuel fits in. He hasn't been a productive player so far for the most part, but he changes roles. So it's all there. The left tackle, Russell Okung, comes over from the Chargers, and that's been an issue. So it's all there for the Panthers to have a pretty special offense, and they're going to need it because that defense could be one of the worst we've seen in Panthers history.
Yeah, that's going to be the tough part, bringing it all together. Travis Hancock from WFNZ in Charlotte is our guest. We're talking Panthers. So what would expectations be? What would a nice goal be? Or would you rather just have the whole thing tank in this Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes?
Yeah, you know, you could say tank. My thing would be, like I said, the wins and losses aren't a thing. To me, they have a really late bye this year. I think it's like week 13, which is like early December-ish, I think, like December 6th or 7th. So I kind of want to see where they're at kind of Thanksgiving on, kind of that bye week on after that, because I want to see them play well towards the end. If they're a team that they're going to start three or four rookies on defense, if they're a team that is just getting better week by week, wins are one thing, but if they're competing, they're playing hard. I compare it, Todd, to last year's Dolphins team, how they were anticipated to be one of the worst ever, and it started out that way. Remember Baltimore and Lamar Jackson and Hollywood Brown? What was it like? 59-10, I believe, week one.
Right.
And then they got crushed week two. And their first four or five games, it was like, wow, the Dolphins are going to be in for Tua, who we thought was the number one pick at the time. They end up getting Tua eventually. But we thought Miami, wow, this is a historically bad team. Well, Brian Flores didn't let them give up, kind of like Matt Rhule won't let this team give up. And they fought their way to five wins. And I think that's kind of what the Panthers will do. They're going to look ugly. Patrick Mahomes is probably going to crush them when they play the Panthers. And they've got to play Aaron Rodgers and Brees twice and Matt Ryan twice and Brady twice and Minnesota. They have a lot of quarterbacks on their docket. So I don't think wins are something they're going to have a lot of. I just want to see where they're at, and can they get four or five sort of hard-fought victories, and that'll go a long way to what they're anticipated to be next season. Because it's not about now. It's about 2022, 2023. as I said in the Matt Rhule question.
That Chiefs-Panthers game right now, scheduled to be November 8th at Arrowhead. Hopefully that will happen. Hopefully we get NFL going and rocking and rolling. Travis Hancock, thanks so much for your time. And Charlotte, good luck to you and stay safe.
Hey, man, thanks for having me, Todd. I appreciate it.
All right, there's Travis Hancock right here on NFL Live KC. That's going to do it for us. We'll be back with another edition tomorrow night on Sports Radio 810 WHB.